everybody, and thank you for tuning into this episode of Love Women, the show where we interview passionate, accomplished women of color about their work and their souls. I am your host, Monica Vigil. American journalists are navigating an atmosphere quite different than before, an atmosphere of animosity and resistance. When the President of the United States is able to, without hesitation, call journalists sick people who don't really like our country, and attempts to undermine the credibility of news outlets by calling stories fake news, journalism becomes more important than ever. Freedom of the press is how ordinary citizens are able to keep their government accountable and how they can have access to the truth without fear of distortion or censorship. I don't think it's an overstatement when I say that we need journalists. But can we trust the people in the newsrooms to tell our stories if they don't look like most of us? According to a 2016 report by ASNE.org, minority journalists comprised 17% of the workforce in newsrooms. The same report states that of all the supervisor positions, about 13% were minorities and 37% were women. So how are we expected to tell the stories of all people when not all people are in the newsroom leading these truth-seeking expeditions? Our guest today is Editor-in-Chief of the Roundup News, Randy Love, a Black woman who has worked her way to the top and is now in charge of a weekly print newspaper. Thank you for joining me today, Randy.
Hey, you're welcome. How's it going?
Pretty good. Okay, so let's start backwards and work our way forwards. How did you first get involved with the Roundup?
So, funny story. I kind of came back to school after taking a year off and didn't exactly know what I wanted to do. I met a public relations manager. He was like, you should go back to school. You're really smart. You're doing all this stuff for people on the streets because you like music, but you can be getting paid to do this. So I ended up in communications when I came to Pierce, and I was like, this isn't right. And then I saw the paper and was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I saw the journalism classes and was like, okay, I'll give it a shot.
Was that your first time involved in journalism?
Technically, yeah. I don't count high school because it's high school. I was a sports editor and designed a sports page for a half a semester before I was just fed up with my teacher and quit.
But you'd already been interested in being a journalist, sort of, before, because you'd been exposed to being a sports editor.
I enjoyed writing, and I did a lot of poetry and stuff like that, and I like to make sure that when I talk to people, I get their side of the story, so I'm always kind of like trying to get information out there. So I guess in a way I've always kind of been interested in it and didn't realize it.
And then you got into the Roundup. You just sort of interested in the class and you took it?
Yeah. So I didn't know that we had the public relations degree, and I was like, okay, what's close to public relations? Oh, journalism. Okay, cool. So I kind of like started going down that path. I ended up in class, journalism 202 and hadn't took 101, so it was crazy because I was sitting there and I'm like, I have to write stories every week, I have to talk to people, I don't like talking to people, why am I here, why am I doing this, wait, okay, I kind of like it, this guy's crazy, this teacher is insane, but like,
shout out to Jeff.
Like, I stayed and it was a lot of fun, and you know, being there I learned a lot that I realized I kind of knew but needed like reinforcement, and I just was like, okay, this is something that I actually really enjoy doing that I didn't know for a fact was going to be a path I was going to take.
And so for those who don't know, the Journalism 202 class is actually writing for the newspaper. So you go from the 101 class, which is learning how to write for a newspaper, and the next step is, okay, you're writing for it now.
And I skipped that because I'm crazy.
So what was that like, the 202 class? Like, what, like, for those who don't know, like, how is that, like, broken down?
So you're literally thrown in, like, I mean, it sounds bad, but you go out, you know, you have these stories. You have editors that say, hey, this is going on campus. We need somebody to cover it. You pick a story up, you go out, and you talk to these people to get the information for, you know, an event going on campus, or a sports game, or some type of breaking news story, or something that people don't necessarily know about, because a lot of people come to community college or any college in general and don't focus on stuff outside of, you know, their classes or a sorority or a club or something. And it's like when you go and you join the paper, you have a whole new world that you're exposed to because you're not used to doing that necessarily. You have to go out and talk to people. You have to create this story that people will want to read and, you know, put out this information that they might not otherwise know. So it's a little crazy, but it's not hard if you really care.
What was that like when you first started as a reporter, having to go and talk to people, like, you know, sources, like, you have to go up and, like, talk to people, random people, strangers, and interview them?
I don't have a problem talking to people. It was the fact that I didn't think they were going to talk to me that might have been the thing. Like, one-on-one, I've always been kind of like, oh, there's a person there, they're not doing anything, how you doing, and go up to them. But, like, having to get information out of them and you're not sure if that's going to come, it's kind of nerve-wracking. Like, you'll be like, hey, Mr. Guy, dude, whoever you are, like, I need to ask you a question. And you're like, no. Okay, bye. Like, it was a little scary, but after a while, you get used to it, and you're, like, able to either get them to give the information you need because you know how to relate to them where they're not going to shoo you away, or you just go to the next person that you know you can get the information from.
Yeah, and I actually have a question regarding that, but we're going to circle back to that. Okay. So what positions have you held in the Roundup?
So I started as a reporter, and then I went to sports editor, news editor, photo editor, and now I'm the editor-in-chief.
So once you joined the Roundup, did you always aspire to be the editor-in-chief, or what made you want to do it?
When I joined, I just thought of it as, okay, I want this degree so I can move on and get my public relations thing going on. But as time went on, I was like, oh, I actually really like this. Like, I like public relations and I like that aspect, which is the dark side of journalism for people who don't know. But, like, I like that aspect too, but I really enjoy being able to put out this information that, you know, someone might not have known if I didn't go get the story for them. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to explain it. I didn't expect to be here today, but as the semester went on, as the years went on, I was just like, that sounds so bad, the years. I was just like, yes, I want to be the person in charge so I can make sure there's something going on and I want that covered. I have that out there. I'm helping share the voice of the school and myself.
So what is the process of becoming editor-in-chief?
We want to go there? Well, first of all, you have to be well-rounded. So if you're trying to become editor-in-chief, you have to be able to, you know, look at a photo and know if it's bad or good. You have to be able to look at a story and know if it needs work, if it's missing something, and to be able to edit it. You have to be able to design a page, which is not the easiest thing. And, like, you know, once you have to be able to talk to people and communicate with people and empathize and sympathize for that fact and understand all these things. And once you have those qualities and those skills down, you can apply, and you have to, you know, go through making sure you have a good resume, which shows all the stuff that you've done in the past, all your accomplishments, all the things that show that you can run, you know, an organization, because that's what this is. And you have an interview, and, you know, it's like a normal job interview. It's no games. Like, they want to know if you can actually do this. And it's a job. I mean, it's school, but it's a job. And
yeah, an unpaid
I love
one.
It. I mean, yeah.
They should pay us, but
it's like an internship.
Yeah. And there's no favoritism involved in the quote-unquote hiring process, because the people who are interviewing us are not our advisors or our professors. They are people outside of the school.
Yes. So when I interviewed, they were former editors-in-chief who have been gone long enough that they don't know me. So sometimes there might be an editor-in-chief that you've known, and it's like, okay, that's not fair, because they know you, they might, you know, be biased towards you or against you, but, you know, you have to try and eliminate that. So there was a photographer and two former editor-in-chiefs. One was of the newspaper, one was of the magazine. And I had never met them. Well, I kind of met one briefly, but I mean, I didn't have any kind of relationship with them. And I got a little backstory on them. They got a little backstory on me, asked me questions, and we went from there.
So what is it like now being in that seat, being in charge of a weekly print newspaper? And there's a print newspaper, but you guys have an online edition as well. What is that like?
It is one word, insane. Like, it's a lot of fun, but it can be really stressful, because you want to make sure that you're getting this information out on time, but you don't want to say something incorrect, and that can cause a problem. Like, you don't want to give the incorrect name of a person, or, you know, quote them wrong, or, you know, for sports, people are crazy about sports. You don't want to put out something that says, like, this happened and that never happened. Or, you know, like, there's little things that can really drive you crazy on a day-to-day basis. But at the end of the day, when, you know, Wednesday comes around and you see that print copy of the paper, you're just like, wow, we put this together. We, you know, we produced something. And leading the team that did that is really rewarding. You're, like, happy. But then, you know, a couple hours later, you're like, okay, let's start over.
Yeah, and not just that. You have a newspaper and you got to, like, appreciate it for maybe an hour. And then you go into what we call hell sheet, mm-hmm. which is you're all sitting in a room, all the photographers, the writers, the editors, and your advisors. And it's to go through the entire paper and point out what's wrong with it.
Mm-hmm. So hell sheet's fun. You know, they sit there, and there's two versions of hell sheet. There's the ed board hell sheet, which is all the editors and, you know, the advisors come in and, you know, rip everything apart in detail. And it's like, this doesn't make sense. This headline doesn't work. It doesn't go with the story. This lead didn't work. Why didn't you change it? Why didn't you catch that? Oh, this design flaw. Did you notice that? This doesn't quite, you know, things, you're just like, okay, I want to cry sometimes. But, like, you think about it, you learn from it, you grow, and you keep moving on. And then there's the entire staff of the paper with the reporters, the photographers, editors, and the advisors come in and kind of do it again, but a little different because for editors, there's a little more information that you need to get to be able to grow and continue fixing things with the pages and so forth. But as a reporter, it's not necessarily the same kind of thing, or a photographer. So it's a little crazy. And the thing about Edward Hell Sheet is you can talk back and you can communicate and you can get your point across. But when it comes to Hell Sheet with everybody, you just got to sit there and take it. And you're just like, but I didn't do that. They did it. And, but, you know, yeah, you could talk after. But during it, you just got to take it and deal with it and listen to everybody get praise or ripped apart. A little bit of both sometimes.
Yeah. But you do think it's helpful to.
It's very helpful. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah, no, it's very helpful. Like, I mean, if we didn't have Hell Sheet, you would never know what was wrong with something that you did, and you would keep doing the same thing wrong over and over again. So Hell Sheet helps not only you improve, but it helps you see someone else's flaw to help them improve. So it builds a community.
What do you think is the biggest challenge about being editor-in-chief?
Sorry. I have to sneeze. And it went away. I think that it probably is the fact that you have to try and balance your schedule for school with the rest of your life. So if you're working, if you have kids, if you take care of parents, if you, you know, have night classes or other classes or whatever the case may be, you have to figure out how that can work in conjunction with everything that you need to do for the paper, which is making sure your editors are on top of the reporters and the photographers, getting stuff in, making sure that people are communicating if there are any problems, handling any problems that come in. The most challenging part is just balance. And some people have an issue with balance, and, you know, but others don't. And you just have to find yours, and you have to work with it.
So back to what you had mentioned earlier about wondering if a source is going to tell you things, you're going to get the information out of them. So I've worked for the Roundup News as a staff writer and then an editor. Mm-hmm. So I understand that sometimes it's difficult getting administrators or sources to talk to the newspaper. Sometimes it's really frustrating or difficult or just inconvenient because you'll be working on an important story that affects a lot of students, maybe like a story about budgets or a new building being made or something like that. And some people will just not talk to the newspaper, or they just say they're too busy or whatever. Why do you think that is, or how do you deal with that?
So I'll answer both parts. Why do I think they do it? Because they don't want to be held liable for saying something that they might not have meant to say or said incorrectly. So if they don't talk to you, they don't have to deal with it. Or they might actually be busy, or they might actually not be the person you're supposed to talk to. How does that hinder us? We need to get information out. If it's something going on and we can't find a person, or they don't want to speak to us because, you know, of something someone did 10, 12 years ago, which has happened, you know, like a person was misquoted or a misleading thing was said, and they're angry and they just hold a grudge, like, that doesn't change the fact that you still know the information and you're the only one I can talk to. So, like, it hinders us because then we have to try and figure out another way to run a story and get the information because they don't want to give it to us. And like, it's frustrating, but you find ways. Like, they might not talk to you on the record, but they might tell you something that can get you to somebody else that'll tell you something. Or they might not talk to you at all, and you're just like, all right, I don't know what to do. What other angle can I do with this story? And sometimes it gets killed because you just can't do anything about it, and you just can't run that information, and it sucks because, you know, there's things that happen on campus, and we can't tell you about it if we can't talk to someone. You know, we can't one-sidedly report something. That's not accurate information, and we're not here to do that. Like Trump says, fake news. No, we don't do that. So we can't get the information. We're not going to put it out there, and it sucks for, you know, people that might need to know it about veterans, about, you know, Encore, about new buildings coming on, about disabled students, about, you know, ASL students, whatever the case may be. Like, we can't put this information out there for them to see. And they might not know they have resources or, you know, something. What can we do?
Right. And hearing the stats that I talked about in the beginning about, 17%. Minority journalists comprise 17% of the workforce in newsrooms. What are your thoughts and feelings about the underrepresentation of minorities and women in the newsroom?
So that's two-parted, too. Minorities in general, like, I guess you see more minorities in sports, which sucks because sports are cool, but you're not getting important information out of sports. And if you're a woman who wants to go into sports, it's even harder. It's like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, you know, and you get frowned upon. And or if you are successful in that area, people think, you know, down upon you. They go, oh, you probably slept your way here. Oh, what did you do? Like, who did you pay off? Or, you know, something ignorant. I think it's not fair that we as women or minorities get to do things that are important, like getting news out there. And there are the fact that it's not something promoted. You don't see a lot of successful women of color in journalism. So if you don't see your person, you know, you don't see yourself, then you're not going to want to do it yourself. You have to be the example to get it out there. And a lot of people don't want to do that. They don't want to go through the struggle.
Do you feel like you've had a struggle personally?
In journalism, no. I've had the blessing of having some internships and being able to be here and moving forward and not being judged because of my race or my gender. And that's, you know, I'm okay with that. But there have been other situations where I was just applying for regular basic jobs, like, you know, 9 to 5, I'm in college student jobs, where people have said something about my race or my gender. And I'm just like, what does that have to do with my ability to do this job? I'm just like any other person. I'm just like the man or the Asian woman or, you know, the white man or whatever it may be. Like, everyone's equal. That what matters is your ability to do something. And if you can't do that, that's what you should be judging. It angers me, but I know that anger is not going to do anything about it. Me actually putting myself out there and continue to do what I'm doing, writing, learning, taking photos, blogging, whatever it may be, is going to be what shows that I'm somebody.
What sort of effect do you think it has on the quality or types of stories if we're having them reported by just white men? Because if you don't have minorities and you don't have women, what's left? White men.
So you don't get a voice. You don't get creative ideas because they're not that they all think the same, but there's a certain type of mentality a certain race has. It can be in any race. You know, you could be Asian, black, white, whatever the case may be, and you might have a certain type of thought process because that's how you were raised. So if white men are the only ones out there giving us information, they might not necessarily think about how a woman might feel in a situation. They might not think about another ethnicity's feelings because it's not something they experience. They can understand, but they don't know. So if you're not out there with minorities and women sharing that information too, you're not going to get it. So if we had a staff of all white men, no matter what age range it was, it would be completely different than our diverse staff that we have now.
Which actually leads me into my next question. So 2 semesters ago, the EIC of the newspaper was a man, the EIC of the magazine was a woman, and the program director was a woman. Last semester, all 3 were women. This semester, the EIC of the magazine is a man, but the other 2, which are you and I, are women. So here on our college campus, we have a lot of women journalists. I would say even our reporters, there's a lot of females. Why do you think that is? Like, in there's a lot of representation of women here, just in our newsroom.
That's a good question. I never really thought about that. I just realized that we're diverse, and it, you know, it's a good thing to see that. But to actually put it into perspective, it seems that people come to the school for specialties, and our journalism department is amazing. We have, you know, people that are in the industry doing things currently, so it's not like they stopped. Like, you know, maybe they retired, but they still have a lot of things that they can explain and express to us, and it's current and it's topical, and it makes it different. We have a lot of diversity in, well, not necessarily, but we have women and men in our advisory staff, which makes it where you're not getting one side either. So I think that
having, now that you said not really, you're like, oh, not really. Jill, Jeff, Rob, Tracy, they're all white.
Yeah.
We have all white advisors.
And even our public relations teacher, Stacy, is white.
Yeah, Matt's so, white.
Yeah, I mean.
That's interesting.
But they have diverse minds because of experiences that they've been through and the positions that they've held themselves. So although that they are, by definition, Caucasian people, they deal with so many things that they don't think the typical, whatever that might mean, way a Caucasian person would think.
But that does show that there is still room for improvement, even in our supervising positions here on campus.
Maybe where one day. Where is everyone else?
Yeah. Journalism department, if you're listening to this, where are the people of color at? Okay, so the New York Times had a story on how there are more and more women journalists in the classroom, like we just talked about, who graduate and get their degrees in journalism. But there's a great discrepancy between that number and the number of women who end up in professional newsrooms. That number is much lower. Why do you think that is? Like, there are a lot of women getting their degree in journalism, but there's not a lot of women being hired in the newsrooms. Is that they're not being hired? Is it that they're not applying for those positions? What do you think it is?
It kind of comes back to what I said earlier when I said they don't really see themselves, like, I mean, you can't see yourself on radio, but radio was a part of journalism too, but you don't hear yourself, you don't see yourself. So even though you go to school and do all these things, you're like, oh, but really, can I do it? Like, I have a bachelor's degree in sociology. I could have became a social worker. I could have became, you know, a social therapist, like all these different things I could have done, but I didn't really see myself there because I literally didn't see anyone that looked like me. And I have, like, too many emotions. But, like, you know, when you don't see yourself or read about people like you or anything in that fact, when you want to go into a certain type of career, you're not going to necessarily pursue it unless you have someone pushing you. And they might not have that push, or they might not have that drive, or they might be discouraged because they don't see themselves.
So what does it mean to you to be a Black female journalist?
It means that I personally have to step my game up because there's not a lot of us. There's, you know, and the majority of us are in sports, and I love sports. Sports are cool, but sports aren't everything. I would prefer to report the news and get that information out there. And if I want to do that, I have to keep striving. I have to look for internships. I have to do me and not worry about what somebody thinks of because of my skin color. When you hear me on the phone, I don't sound like a Black woman. When you, you know, read an email, I don't sound like a Black woman. When you see that picture, you're like, oh. And then, you know, 9 times out of 10, my name's Randy, so people think I'm a white guy anyways. So, you know, that might be a benefit. But I know personally I have to think about myself and strive for my goals. And once I get myself out there, I have to look back on my people, not just necessarily Black people, but women of color, and help us all rise up because it's not just about me.
So let's end here. What is your advice to young girls?
Don't give up on your dreams. Don't let yourself get discouraged because you're a girl or you're a minority. Like, you sit there and you do what you want to do. If that's something you want to achieve and do in your future and see yourself and be happy and successful, go for it. Point blank. Period.
Thank you, Randy. So before we go, Randy, just thank you so much for being on the show today. It was really inspiring to hear about your journey.
Absolutely.
And I know you were very tired today, so thank you for mustering up all the strength you had
you
to
know,
talk.
The roundup and the bull are exhausting little things, and being an editor-in-chief and a reporter, Yeah. Insane.
So pick up the roundup, an issue of the roundup every Wednesday. And then the Bull magazine, when does that come out?
It'll be out at the end of May. I don't know the exact date, but it'll be there before finals.
Before finals. Start checking those newsstands. So to the listeners at home, thank you for tuning into this episode of Love Women, the show where we interview passionate, accomplished women of color about their work and their souls. Join me next week where I'll be interviewing a real-life rocket scientist. Until next time, I'm your host, Monica Vigil, and you're listening to KPCRadio.com.